Happy birthday in 16 nations.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, welcome to 2009. I'm Steve Chiotakis. In this economic fallout, a steady currency doesn't hurt, and the euro has been proving itself quite the resilient one lately. 10 years ago today, charter countries switched their money for something untested, unworked. And as Stephen Beard reports from Marketplace's European desk, it's overcome a lot of odds.
With a giant street party on New Year's Day in 1999, the people of Frankfurt celebrated the birth of the euro. The euphoria didn't last. The new currency fell on the foreign exchange markets and went on falling for more than a year. Many economists, like Professor Tim Congdon, forecast at the time the euro would disintegrate.
I've always thought that when we come back and look at this in 10 or 20 years' time, we'll just regard Europe as having gone balmy.
10 years on, the euro doesn't look quite so crazy. Howard Wealdon is with BGC Brokers. He says merging more than a dozen European currencies into one has worked beautifully.
It's created a stability that was never there before, and thus I think the euro has been a great success.
The euro has flourished in recent years, largely due to dollar weakness, but the eurozone is now sliding into recession. One currency with one interest rate for 16 different economies, now that could be tricky. Gideon Rachman of the Financial Times.
I think that it will be very interesting to see how the euro area copes during recession, because at that point, the fine details of economic policy, things like the level of interest rates, become even more urgent.
Nevertheless, the euro is now riding high. Slovakia has just become the 16th country to adopt it. Poland, Hungary and Denmark may not be far behind. At the European desk in London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
In an appeal from the Vatican, Pope Benedict said more should be done to fight global poverty. The financial slowdown should be an opportunity to question the dominant development model, his words. It could also, he said, narrow the gap between the haves and the have-nots. I pretty much know what the Pope would say about stealing. Thieves took a copper statue belonging to disgraced financier Bernard Madoff. They returned it with a note attached. It said, "Bernie the Swindler, lesson, return stolen property to rightful owners." And it was signed, "The Educators." Madoff is accused of running a Ponzi scheme where losses could top $50 billion. No word on whether anyone will get their money back. He complied with an order to furnish a complete list of assets. Listening to the Morning Report for Thursday, January 1st, 2009, at marketplace.org. There is a new administration coming to Washington in less than 3 weeks, but the old guard is still in control in Havana. 50 years ago today, Fidel Castro took control of the island nation, and while he's in failing health, his brother Raul is now president, and a U.S.-imposed embargo is still in place. Could there be an American policy change on its way? From the America's Desk at WLRN in Miami, Marketplace's Dan Gretsch reports.
President Bush took a hard stance on Cuba. He restricted the money Cuban Americans could send to relatives on the island, and he limited family visits to once every 3 years. Obama has promised to roll back those restrictions early in his first term. Reese Ehrlich is author of the book Dateline Havana. He says if Obama further loosened the embargo, Cuba would quickly emerge as an important trading partner.
There's oil deposits offshore that U.S. companies could be investing in. There's a lot of tourism. There's lots of business to be done with Cuba if the Obama administration changes U.S. policy.
But that's a big if.
Cuba is a high-risk issue with very little reward if you're sitting in the White House. To even have normal relations as we do with China or Vietnam is to ignite a firestorm of protest in Miami and parts of New Jersey.
Ehrlich says the embargo, like the Castro government, is likely to survive 2009. In Miami, I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
A settlement in a fee dispute has halted any talk of removing Viacom networks from Time Warner Cable's lineup. Viacom, owner of MTV, Nickelodeon, and Comedy Central, had threatened to pull the plug if Time Warner didn't pay a bigger fee share. There's another channel being added to many cable TV lineups tonight. The MLB network is in Major League Baseball. But can a startup cable network survive in this economy? Here's Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson.
The MLB network is doing one thing very differently than its football counterpart, the NFL network. It's giving an equity interest to various cable and satellite providers in order to get on the air in more homes right away. Sports consultant and former CBS Sports president Neil Pilson says that means if the MLB network is successful,
they're going to have to share their revenues with a number of other partners. On the other hand, if the NFL channel achieve success, they will keep 100% of the revenues.
The MLB network will not be airing many live games. It'll be a mix of classic matchups and original programming, including a daily 8-hour baseball highlight show once the regular season starts.
Their effort is going to be to make the channel the place to go first for baseball news and information 24/7.
As for starting up in the middle of a recession, Pilson says, there's never really an easy time to start a cable channel. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
My mom used to tell me, you won't lose weight parked in front of that TV all the time. You got to get up and exercise, she'd say. Well, the health club industry hopes some who overindulge this holiday find their way back to the gym or to the weight room. These are leaner times, though, in the pocketbook. Here's Andrea Gardner.
Health clubs are an $18 billion industry in the U.S. More than 40 million of us belong to a gym. January is usually a banner month for new memberships, and despite the economy, this January is likely to be no exception. Joe Moore is with the International Health Racket and Sports Club Association.
We see the health club industry being very similar to the movie theater industry, for instance, where movie ticket sales may pick up during an economic downturn, because health clubs are also very recreational and they're a form of entertainment.
Moore says historically recessions haven't hurt the industry much, but health clubs are still being proactive, cutting costs and offering more competitive rates. In Los Angeles, I'm Andrea Gardner for Marketplace.
Here's a weight loss phrase you hear a lot of during times of economic woes, belt tightening. But is the industry that inspired that expression feeling the pinch? Marketplace's Sean Cole went to find out.
Cellar Leather is a modest little shop in Hyannis, Massachusetts. It's owned and run by Jeff Taylor, who was all alone behind the counter the day I visited.
Well, what you see when you first come in the door there is just a small sampling of some of the handmade belts, some without buckles, some with buckles.
Most of these belts are his own handiwork, 100% leather, no fillers, some with elaborate designs. Taylor's been making belts for more than 30 years. But in an age of such rampant belt tightening, is the humble belt maker adjusting his ways?
Have you had to punch more holes in your belt?
No, I haven't.
Have you had to make shorter belts?
It just depends on the person. You know, I have a lot of customers that come back that have lost weight. And
really?
Need a belt made shorter. If it's a lot of weight loss, I can actually retool the belt from the other end of the belt so you're not looking at an excessive amount of holes.
And what Taylor's dealing with on the retail side, David Sack is experiencing wholesale.
We're making shorter belts, that's for sure. And shorter belts are cheaper.
Sack is president and founder of a high-end line of belts called Streets Ahead.
We punch on average of 5 holes in our belt.
Mm.
But if that is required by in the next month or two, we'll punch holes from the beginning of the tip to the end of the buckle. So you could actually use it as a dog leash if you want. Whatever it takes to survive.
To survive in a nation of narrowing waistlines.
Excuse me, guys. My name is Sean Cole. I'm with the public radio program.
All set today.
To measure the full circumference of the problem, I asked passersby on Boylston Street in Boston if they've been tightening their belts. Some understood the question instantly.
Yes, I've worked very hard so I could tighten my belt, take off a few extra pounds.
No, you just buy another belt.
You just buy another belt.
Yeah.
Strangely, some people thought I was talking about money.
It's important to not completely retract. Confidence in the market has a lot to do with people spending.
I think that's very wise and cogent. I am actually talking about your belt. Your belt.
I think you need to expand your definition of belt tightening.
Really?
Yeah.
In Boston, I'm Sean Cole for Marketplace.
We'll be right back.
Sometimes the best new ideas aren't so much discovered as they're found. Scientists have picked up on that, using what they've found in nature to bring about new products. This morning, the story of a sticky situation. From the Marketplace Innovations Desk at North Carolina Public Radio, here's Janet Babin.
The little green gecko in the Geico commercials is quite the car insurance salesman, but scientist Robert Full says real geckos are much more impressive. We're in his lab at the University of California at Berkeley. Full takes a foot-long gecko out of its cage.
These toes actually uncurl and peel, much like this party favor that when you blow it sort of comes out and peels back, and their toes do that in milliseconds.
Billions of microscopic hairs on gecko toes let them stick like crazy glue to walls and ceilings, but these critters can peel off at will. No man-made adhesive could match the gecko's grip and easy release. Imagine the commercial applications. Professor Full and Berkeley roboticist Ron Fearing have and are close to cashing in. They created a reusable adhesive that mimics the gecko's toes. Fearing demonstrates how his adhesive sticks when it slides along a glass panel, just like a gecko would. What is making that sound?
You're hearing millions and millions of these nano hairs rubbing against each other and vibrating. So you're hearing the sound of nanotechnology.
The UC Berkeley team's work has attracted the attention of dozens of companies that are in the market for sticky stuff. Baseball glove makers, fashion designers who dream of shoes with no tops, surgeons who need to hang on to slippery tissue. David Edwards is chief technology officer at Avery Dennison, the company that makes price tags and labels. Edwards says the company wants to create new products using gecko adhesive.
We could imagine it being used in Band-Aids, where it would be very, very easy to peel off the skin, almost ouchless.
Edwards has made some gecko tape prototypes from plastic. That's relatively easy to do in the lab, but mass production's a lot harder.
And there are billions of these filaments in every square inch of tape you make. So finding a way to do that very, very quickly, of course, is really the challenge.
And it will cost millions in research and development. Edwards hopes to have the tape on the market in 3 years. Meanwhile, Avery Dennison's competitors are working just as hard to put gecko tape on store shelves. In Berkeley, California, I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Finally, in this economic fallout, there is apparently a renewed effort to pinch some pennies, as in saving money the old-fashioned way, in ceramic swine. Retailers are reporting that piggy banks have become suddenly popular. Of course, saving money isn't so popular. Only 2.8% of us save on a regular basis. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Happy New Year, and enjoy your Thursday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.